Okay, we've reached 6 o'clock, so we will call to order the December 5th meeting of the Story County Board of Adjustments. Can we have a roll?
Miller.
Aye.
McGill.
Here.
Scarlett.
Here.
Steele. Steele Meyer, absent.
We've got an agenda that's been sent out previously. Do we have any changes or modifications to that agenda? Hearing none, then that will stand approved as it was distributed. We've also got two copies of minutes that were distributed previously, an August 9th, 2012 minutes, as well as a November 7th, 2012. Do we have any additions or modifications to those minutes? Okay, hearing none, then those will stand approved as they were distributed. This is the time for general public comments. Do we have any comments from the public this evening on things other than the cases that are to be heard later? We have any old business to bring forth, and since we have tabled items down, that doesn't include those as we go. Since we don't have any, we're going through a lot of protocol here tonight. We don't have any new business items that are being proposed by the staff, but we do have two items that are currently tabled. The first one is an appeal, 01-12, the Wonder Appeal Request, for which we have received an email. But first of all, I'd like to request a motion to take this off the table, because it was placed on the table.
So moved.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second to take appeal 01-12 off the table. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. And we do have a request to withdraw the appeal, and I think it would be appropriate this time to ask for a motion to accept the applicant's withdrawal.
Move.
Second. Oh, go ahead.
We've got a motion and a second to withdraw the appeal for appeal 01-12, which would essentially take that one off the record. Is there any other formality other than accepting the applicant? I didn't think there would be as we go down through that. So, do we need to roll call that, or we? Please roll.
Aye.
All right, Steele. Scarlett.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye. Okay. Moving on to our next item on the agenda, and it's VAR 03-12, the Sopir variance. This was tabled the last time, and so we will also have to accept a motion to remove this from the table.
So moved.
Okay.
We've got a motion and a second to take VAR 03-12 off the table. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. So we will begin the deliberations then. Now, as I've gone through the records of the minutes the last time, the staff report was accepted at that point in time in terms of the findings of fact. But I would like to ask the staff, given the fact that I wasn't around, I know three of the others were here, I'd like you to at least summarize, if you will.
Sure. Yep, no, and that's what I was planning on doing, so if you're okay with that, I can continue kind of through the same presentation that we had. I won't really summarize too much of the general information, but the property that's being brought for the variance is located right here in the yellow hash marks. It's along North Dakota Avenue, just a little bit north of the city of Ames, more so north of 215th Street. I got some site shots of the property here. This would be standing approximately in the northwest corner of the property, kind of looking to the south. This one about the same location, looking a little bit more to the east. Kind of gives you an idea of what the land looks like out there. This one looking from about the center of the north property line due south. This one looking a little bit back to the west. And this one here from approximately would be the northeast corner of the property, looking towards the west. And then this one looking a little bit more due south on there. So gives you a good idea of what the property looks like from those vantage points. Going through just a quick summary on the findings of fact and the key dates to this case. First of all, as we always mention with variance cases, zoning was implemented in Story County on September 2nd of 1958. At this time, this particular property, the east half of it, the half closest to North Dakota Avenue, was zoned R1 residential, while the west half remained in the A1 agricultural zoning district. At that time, the A1 district did require a minimum of 1 net acre to be considered buildable for a single-family dwelling, and the R1 zoning district required a minimum lot size of 30,000 square feet to be considered buildable. On December 22nd of 1960, the R1 district's minimum lot size requirement to be considered buildable for a single-family dwelling changed from 30,000 square feet to 25,000 square feet. Additionally, on June 30th of 1977, the A1's minimum acreage requirement went from 1 acre to 35 acres. And again, that's really the key date to that 35-acre requirement in the A1 zoning district is June 30th of 1977. With that, on January 28th of 1986, the south 11 acres of this original quarter-quarter section, the original 40-acre parcel, was split off, which created the subject parcel. The subject parcel in its current configuration. So the date that this parcel was created was January 28th of 1986. On March 22nd of 1989, the official zoning map of Story County was amended, changing the zoning of this parcel to entirely A1 agriculture, so that east half that was R1 was changed to A1 on March 22nd of 1989. On August 30th of 2012, staff did perform property research on this property, and we did note in that research that none of the exceptions to the minimum lot size requirement of the A1 zoning district applied, and as such, a zoning permit for a single-family dwelling could not be issued. And as you had mentioned, this item was tabled at the last meeting, which took place on November 7th of 2012. The legal principles for approving a variance are on the screen here and included in your staff report. Some of the key findings that we put in that staff report included in 2010, the Sandsgard Seed Farm did purchase the subject parcel along with other parcels that totaled roughly 168 total acres, and that was purchased at a price of $1,281,000, or what we estimated to be about $6,900 per acre. Of those 186 acres, using GIS, we roughly estimated that about 61 acres of that was timber, 29 acres was pasture ground, and 96 acres would be considered medium-quality cropland. According to the 2011 Farmland Value Survey, which was done by Iowa State University Extension, in March of 2011, pasture ground in central Iowa was valued at approximately a little over 2,000 per acre. Timber ground was valued at a little over 2,000 per acre, and medium quality cropland was valued at a little over 6,000 per acre. Based off those numbers, we did estimate that the 160 acres that Sandsgard purchased was valued at approximately $780,000, or about 60% of what it was actually sold for. We additionally noted that there was an old vacant farmstead site totaling 4.52 acres directly north of this site. That parcel was sold in 2010 for $120,000, or about $26,550 per acre. So with that, you can kind of see the difference between residential land and agricultural land. You can see where that residential farmstead parcel just north of there sold for a considerably more amount of money than did the rest of the farm ground. Based off that, we did some more estimating, and the subject parcel, this subject parcel we did consider to be about 8 acres of timber ground and 21 acres of pasture ground, and we would estimate its agricultural value at $64,800 based off the 2011 farmland survey done by Iowa State. Knowing that that farmland survey value was about 60% of what the land actually sold for in 2010, we would estimate that this particular parcel sold for approximately $108,000. The appellant has stated that the property is not able to be used as agricultural crop production ground due to topography, soils, and erosion conditions. Furthermore, the soil's ability to produce hay is hampered by sandy soils and limited soil moisture. LIDAR elevation data does show elevations on this property ranging from 990 feet above sea level to 932 feet above sea level, approximately 58 feet worth of difference on the elevation. Additionally, there is approximately 3.5 acres worth of floodplain on this property, and the average CSR value of the subject parcel, according to the Story County Assessor's Office, is 67.2. Looking at the LISA score that we did with the property research, the land evaluation portion of that LISA score, which is similar to the CSR, and the numbers are always matching up pretty well, but that score is 70 out of 100. Map here shows the elevation of the property. See, the high point would be about right here, and you can kind of see how the parcel generally drains into that floodplain area as well from up here and down into that area down there towards Onion Creek. The essential character of the locality to this subject parcel is definitely a rural residential area, as the subject parcel is surrounded by agricultural land to the north and to the west and residential land to the east and to the south. The proposed variance in no way would affect the essential character of the locality, and furthermore, staff does not believe granting the proposed variance would be contrary to the public interest. This map here shows the official zoning map of Story County. You can see the areas in yellow here being the R1 residentially zoned areas. The areas with no color are the A1 agriculturally zoned areas. This here is a classification map that the assessor's office uses for tax purposes. Again, yellow areas are all the residentially tax parcels, and the ones with no color are agriculturally tax parcels. Looking at the Story County Development Plan, it is oriented towards protecting and preserving the county's agricultural resources, protecting and preserving the county's natural resources, and promoting and improving the mobility of the county's residents and fostering cooperation and collaboration between rural and urban residents and public and private enterprises that enhances the quality of life assets in the county. Furthermore, the Andrew and Fringe Plan, which is a component, an adopted component of the County Development Plan, designates this subject property as urban residential, a sub-designation of the urban services areas. The urban service area is meant to be the land in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan that is meant to be annexed and developed inside the city of Ames during the life of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, which is up to approximately 2030. These areas are planned to be developed at urban standards rather than rural residential standards. We did note that the addition of one home to an approximately 29-acre parcel does not necessarily restrict that parcel from being developed to urban standards at some point in the future, but it definitely could create some future difficulties if not left in its current vacant state. Looking at the land development regulations, they are oriented to provide for a balance between the review and regulation authority of Story County governmental agencies and the rights of landowners. It is therefore determined to be in the public interest to provide for a balance between land use rights of individual landowners and the economic, social, and environmental concerns of the public. While the land development regulations typically require a minimum of 35 acres to be considered buildable for a single-family dwelling in the A1 zoning district, there are 4 exceptions. Which would allow for parcels with less than 35 acres to be considered buildable. One of those exceptions is the lease exception, and normally would apply to this parcel if it was located in the agricultural and farm service areas of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan or any other designation on the county development plan. The lease exception was removed from land in the urban services areas to avoid development that would not be done at urban standards, which would go against the spirit and intent of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. Furthermore, we did note that there are other avenues the appellant could use to create a buildable lot on this subject parcel, more particularly an official zoning map amendment, also considered a rezoning. The subject parcel is adjacent to land that is zoned R1 residential on its east side, and it's staff's opinion that a rezoning could be more in line with the spirit and intent of the land development regulations. With that, hopefully that gives enough of a summary of the staff report that we provided, and we do have the alternatives on the screen here above, and once again, I would be happy to answer any questions on the proposed variance.
Questions for staff?
things of facts that were essentially approved the last time. So we won't be going through that again, but this would be a good time if you've got anything, reservations about that. Now, do we have any LISA requirements in terms of the scoring? So this rated under the 70, but what are the requirements either in the A1 or the... What stipulations do we have relative to LISA scores?
Well, typically, if it was zoned agricultural and farm service, the LISA score is based out of 300 total points. You've got the land evaluation portion, which is 100, and the site assessment portion, which is the 200 points. For it to meet that exception, it would have to be under 266 on the total LISA and under 172 on the site assessment portion, which this particular one did score under. Again, however, because of the stipulations with the Ann Arbor Fringe Plan and wanting to have smaller lot sizes out there than that 1 acre, we removed that exception from these areas to foster the development of that plan.
If not, then we will turn over to the applicant. And if the applicant would approach the podium, identify themselves, and address the group, we'd appreciate it.
My name is Steve Papier. I want to thank all the board members again for coming. Just to summarize again briefly, similar to last time, we have a letter where we actually indicated a reasoning for applying for the variance and that we were looking to build a residential home on the property. The property owner has we've contacted the property owner. The property owner has been willing to sell this property because it's a property that he doesn't generally make a profit on, and that's been our understanding based on our discussions with the property owner. In discussions with staff, obviously based on the requirements for the variance, the legal requirements for the variance, initially they indicated to us, obviously, that the property, based on its LISA scores and based on past use of the property, that it probably would qualify for a variance based on the use of the property now and in the past. At the last meeting, I went in a little bit more depth about some of the background and so on. I'm not going to repeat the letter, but I do want to go through the legal principles again that are required for the board to consider for the variance. The findings of necessary hardship are, one, the land in question cannot yield a reasonable return if used only for a purpose allowed in that zone. Of the legal principles involved, the last meeting, it appeared that was probably one of the ones that was one item that maybe was not necessarily clear for the board members and maybe what profitability of the property might be. So we actually did a little bit more research on the property, and we went to the Iowa State Extension and Outreach information to be able to develop costs for what the current property can develop for profitability based on what's currently there. I'm just going to go ahead and read that to you now. I think Charlie included that with your packet, if I remember correctly, or maybe emailed that to you. So, for the cash rent basis, based on ISU Extension Outreach FM 1851 from the 2012 survey for determining cash rental rates for agricultural properties, the pasture area rental rate in Story County is approximately $47 per acre for unimproved permanent pasture. The property has a maximum of about 17 acres. We take out the floodplains and take out some of the other areas to be able to use for pasture area. Therefore, the annual income without improvements is about $800 for pasture use. To improve the cash rent value, the pasture could be improved. Per the Iowa State Extension and Outreach AG 96 document updated in February 2012, pasture improvements include a cash cost, an average of $83.53 an acre, or an annual cost of about $1,500 an acre for the property. In this case, the cash rent value may be able to be increased about $80 per acre, and that would leave you an annual profit of about $1,360. This does not include land costs or other inputs for maintenance and pasture land, such as spraying, fencing, etc. In order to provide some information for you on that, I use the ISU Extension Outreach FM 17 for the 2012 annual cost per acre of maintaining grass pastures is approximately $175.48 an acre, are about $2,983. So the actual input are a little higher than your output for grass pastures. The other option, obviously, is for hay ground. I know the current property allows for someone to actually come in and cut it. I think they only maybe do one or maybe two cuttings a year. But for calculation purposes, I actually assume three cuttings. And for hay ground, using ISU's extension outreach FM 1712 for annual production costs for established alfalfa or alfalfa hay grass hay, total cost per acre is about $494.66 an acre, or $8,409 for the property, assuming 68 tons of hay, assuming three cuttings at a yield of 4 tons per acre. So using ISU's October average hay cost in Perry County, Iowa, of $120 per bale for a 4,000 pound bale, that produces an income of about $4,000. So again, the inputs are higher than your output. I just want to provide that information to kind of clarify the property itself. Another consideration is, well, could you just crop that property, because obviously it's higher value, you get better production and so on. The property, all the way back through history, if you look all the way back to the aerials available, it's never been cropped. And the general reason for that appears to be the topography. Topography there doesn't really allow for production row crop farming. And I know that the property owner next door, Steve, I forget his name. The farmer next door, Steve Pultenhauer, actually was approached at one point by a previous property owner and asked if he would actually farm the property. And he said he wouldn't do it because it's just not profitable. So he was going to be able to allow to farm the property for free, and said no. So that's just to give the board some information on the agricultural, some agricultural related profitability for the property. Some of the other legal principles apply to the owners due to the unique circumstances and not into the general conditions of the neighborhood, which may reflect unreasonableness of the ordinance itself. As Charlie had pointed out in some of the slides that he put up on the screen, a lot of the property owners are residential in the area. There are some agricultural areas to the west, but most of those, all those other agriculturals in general, are row cropped or are able to be row cropped. So it doesn't necessarily conform to that same use. The use is to be authorized by the variance will not alter the essential character of the locality. Again, much of the area is already residential, so a residential home in this area would generally fit in with the neighboring properties. I've talked to several of the local property, the surrounding property owners, all of which so far have been supportive of us being able to build a house on the property. I think some of them may have even sent some words of encouragement or support to the county itself. So, granting the variance will not be contrary to the public interest. Again, it generally complies with the surrounding residential areas and rural type setting. And the spirit and intent of the Story County Development Plan and Story County Land Development Regulations are protected. And again, what we're asking really for is a variance from the 35 acres to build the house on the property, which, you know, currently the property is not quite 29 acres, so we're having about a 7-acre difference. In allowing for the variance, the county would allow for a residential home to be built on the property, putting that property into use while preserving, to some degree at least, some of the agricultural benefits of the property, which is generally what the CDP is trying to do. So that's all I have.
Before I move to the public comments, I might ask staff whether we've got any written or other submitted comments. I didn't ask that previously.
Yeah, and we had one from last week from Terry Lewis, but I won't go back over that one. Most of the board does remember that was kind of in favor of the I included one with your packet, and then remember that we had one other one from last week too. So I'll read one from last week. A little bit from Mr. Tom Burke. It says my name is Tom Burke, and I'm on the property at 2503 North Dakota in Maine. I have visited with Stephen Sapir about his intention to build in our area. I have no concerns with his plan and would recommend he be able to do so. And then he left his phone number to go to contact him. The second one came in this morning from Lee Livingston, and that was one that I included with the fact that he simply said, I have seen a proposed building site and I have read the county staff report. I live on 215th Street and have for the past 37 years. I support Stephen Superior's request for a variance. And the other one that we received was from Mr. Superior, and I think he covered that with his comments.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that, Charlie. Now we will open it up to any other comments that we might have for the public. Don't rush the podium one at a time. We'd appreciate it if you come up, identify yourself, and address the board. We would appreciate it.
I'm Jerry Weibel, and I live at 2567 North Dakota. I was not at the last meeting, and I'm here basically to find out what's going on. And I guess from the comments that I just heard, is it my understanding that you're planning just one house for yourself on that property? Oh, okay, fine. I don't have any issue with that at all.
Additional comments?
Thank you, members of the board. I appreciate your service here tonight. I'm Judy Parks, an assistant city attorney for the city of Ames. I've worked for the city for 20-plus years, and I actually staff our zoning board of adjustment, so I've sat up there at the podium. I'll try and make my comments brief because I know how long those evenings can get otherwise, but I appreciate Mr. Superior's comments. I'm sure he has a quality improvement in mind, but I appreciate that especially he spoke to the legal standards that are before you, and that is also what I am here to speak with, as well as one of the other city employees, Charlie Keister, who's on our planning staff, who will speak to some of the factual elements of this case. One of the things I wanted to ask you to keep in mind that sometimes I have to remind our Zoning Board of Adjustment about is what a variance is doing. It is asking for something which is prohibited by the ordinance. And because of that, the hurdle that an applicant has to overcome, and it is their burden, is set as a very high bar. The standards that you have in your code are not unique to your code. They're not unique to the City of Ames code. They have been handed down to us from not only the state legislature, but many, many court decisions over the years, which recite those exact standards that you have. The one about reasonable return, about unique circumstances, about use not altering the essential character, and that it not be contrary to the public interest. And those are what you must keep in mind and which all must be met. If an applicant fails on any one, then granting a variance, as cases have said many times, is illegal. So I would ask you to keep that in mind as you're deliberating. Now, what I want to speak is not to all the elements. I don't believe that I need to address the essential character being altered because this does appear to be a mix of residential and ag butting up against one another, and I don't know that one single residence is going to alter the essential character of the area. But as to the others, I would like to speak a little bit more. I don't believe there appear to be any unique circumstances of this particular property. When we run into those in the city of Ames, it would be something that is completely unique to that particular parcel, which is not present either generally in the community or especially in that particular locale. This doesn't seem to be the case here. This is timberland, ag land, residences in near proximity. Nothing is unique about the particular area that would make it stand out as not being able to be used in conformity with the use that's now going on there. As far as reasonable return, I want to particularly address that standard. because court cases have. That's one that people will look at and think, I could make a better use of that property. It could make more profit if I use it the way I intend to when I'm granted a variance. That is not the legal standard. The standard is that it has to show not that it would make more profit, but that all beneficial use of the property would be lost without a variance. It would go down to zero. And I can tell you, in the number of cases I've seen come in front of the City of Ames, there are probably over 20 years, maybe five, that actually met that standard. It is a very, very high bar. In this particular instance, there is beneficial use. I really appreciated the applicant's profit and loss, or the profit ability testimony, because it does show that all beneficial use of the property is not gone if it's used as it is being used. And in this case, I would argue that that standard then cannot be met. All beneficial use isn't going away if it's used simply the way it continues to be used right now. The other thing I would also ask you to keep in mind is the purpose of allowing variances. We have them there for a reason. It's not just to always turn people down, but it is to avoid an unconstitutional taking. One thing it is not there for is to destroy a community plan. Mr. Cusel will speak a little bit more about the Ames Story County Urban Fringe Plan and the fact that this is out of sync with that. But I do believe it would be contrary to the public interest to grant a variance in this case, especially on an isolated thing, parcel, and doing it on an ad hoc basis. It's contrary to the public interest because there is an alternative before this applicant that would benefit not only him but also others if they chose to change the zoning of a broader area to allow a residence to be there, which would then make this a permitted use. In this instance, so going about that legislation on a applicant-by-applicant basis is not in the public's interest. And so I would respectfully ask you to find that the standards have not been met and that in that instance, the variance should be denied. And I'll turn it over to me. Well, first I'll turn it over to you for questions. I'm sorry.
Question for you. If this is, I assume the alternative you're referring to is if they take it in and have it rezoned R1.
Mm-hmm.
If they take it and rezone it R1, does that open the door for additional development on that property other than just one residence?
I think it would. I mean, I would need to study that a little bit more because I'm not as conversant with the county's zoning as I am with the city's, but I believe it would open it to other development besides just a single residence.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any others? Thank you.
Any other comments?
Thank you for the opportunity here to make a few comments. I met with the Superiors earlier on a different property that was also in the fringe, and I know their desire to live in this area and to build a home on this. It is, by all admission, it is a beautiful piece of land up there. And because of the urban fringe plan, we have a certain number of policies that are trying to preserve this area for the future growth needs of the city. And as Judy said, this isn't the City of Ames's plan. It's City of Ames, City of Gilbert, and Story County together have developed a set of policies to protect agricultural land, but also to provide areas for the cities to grow into, protect those areas from development patterns that would make it more difficult in the future to annex them and to allow an urban-type development to occur. This is an area north of the railroad tracks up to Onion Creek that's been designated as urban residential. This is a designation in the urban fringe plan that says there'll be no development unless and until it is annexed and full city services and infrastructure are installed. There was a 40-acre parcel just north of this where two and a half years ago, there was a 4.5-acre parcel that was asked to be separated from the larger 40-acre parcel through a plat of survey. Because of the urban fringe plan policies, we could not allow that initially because of the requirement that infrastructure needed to be installed up there, and nobody was going to run $2 million worth of sewer and water to serve a single 4.5-acre parcel. We were able to accommodate that by a no-build restriction on the remaining 35.5 acres, therefore allowing the 4.5 acres to be designated, to be sold, separated, and the home on there is now a different ownership. But that 34.5 acres is essentially in reserve until the city is ready to grow in that direction. So the urban residential area of the urban fringe plan has some very strict policies about reserving this area for future growth. The 2080 agreement that we have with the city and with the county and with Gilbert does recognize the supremacy of the county zoning in this area. And if something was to be proposed that met the existing zoning requirements, the city wouldn't have a problem with this. But because he's requesting a variance from the terms of those ordinances, and those ordinances are what we accepted de facto out here as we adopted the urban fringe plan for this area, we have an interest in protecting our growth areas. And if a request for a variance is going to impact our growth policies, the City of Ames does have an interest in that. As I said, the public interest is shared by the city, by the county, and by Gilbert. I'm sorry, I'm just kind of looking for some notes I had here. I bet they're in the car. But there are a number of portions of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan that that speak to this area being reserved for future development. There are some statements in there that says when development occurs, full infrastructure will be provided. It doesn't say when subdivisions, it says when development occurs, full infrastructure will be required. There's also a section in there that says if development occurs and infrastructure isn't there, there should be a mechanism in place to pay for that. At the last meeting and in our comments last month to your meeting, we suggested that we don't think the variance met the requirements of economic hardship and so on, but we did say if the board did choose to grant the variance, we would like to see the three agreements in place. Those three covenants require the owner to petition for annexation when the city asks him to pay for his fair share of any improvements through an assessment agreement if city sewer and water is brought out there. And the third one is to reimburse the city for any costs associated with the buyout of rural water. If he makes contract with Xenia and the city annexes that area, Xenia has to be paid back by the city, and we would seek reimbursement from the property owner for that. I admit it's a disincentive to hook up to Xenia, but it shifts the cost from the city to the developer or to the owner of the property out there. I just want to follow up on the comment of economic hardship and return. The Sandsguard property is 186 acres, and it was purchased as 186 acres for that price that Charlie indicated. And I think any evaluation of what the impact on return and profit is should be considered over that whole 186 acres, because that's what the property owner currently owns. If you're going to start looking at just the marginal fringes, bottomland, timberland, floodplain area, that's a precedent that you could apply to the entire periphery of the Sandsguard property. It's also a criteria that could be applied to probably 25% of the land in the northwest growth area of the city. So I think you have to look at the property as a whole, all 168 acres, to determine what that profitability is and what the economic hardship is on that. I apologize, I don't have my written notes with me, but I'd be willing to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Staff, as we go through that in the last point that's there, the reference to the I'll get my right note, the Sands Gorge Steam Farm, what is the stand? Are they still the owner at this point?
Yeah, you might want to talk to the appellant about that, but I believe there is some sort of purchase agreement that has been formulated regarding that. But in regarding that, our typical protocol for accepting an application from somebody who's not the property owner is to have a signature page from the property owner attached with that, and we do have that. So.
In place?
Yep.
At this point? Okay.
I have a map of all the Sands Gorge property that I can
Okay, anybody else to speak? I think we've had, let's go through the steps. If we go down through that and make sure, I think we've covered everybody here. If not, then we will put it to closing statements from the applicant.
Well, I just want to, again, thank everybody for being here, and then obviously for Charlie and his explanation of the city's stance in regard to the property. I just want to get some clarification. Maybe Charlie, you could help me with this. When the variance request is usually, or a property in general, when it's looked at zoning for the county, isn't it generally looked at per parcel?
You're regarding, repeat it one more time, I guess. Let me try to.
Well, when somebody presents something to the county for a change in zoning or a change and property use or CUP or something of that nature, isn't it usually based on a per parcel?
Yeah, typically what we'll need for most situations is some sort of legal description that's associated with the application. So, you know, for example, you could bring a single parcel such as this one forward for a rezoning, or you could bring the entire 100 acres forward for a rezoning. Obviously, there's going to be different input that goes in depending on the size on a certain amount of things, but yeah.
And then, and I guess another question I would have is, in the past, with the variance requests and so on with the county, haven't they generally been for a single parcel based on the use? And that's generally the purpose of the variance, because that property is different than the other properties, and that's why the applicants are generally seeking a variance.
Yeah, typically variances are associated with, a lot of them that we've had in the past have been for existing single-family dwellings that were too close to the street, and usually they're on a, you know, individual parcel. I'm trying to think if we've ever had anybody that have been multiple parcels, and top of my head, I can't think of any recently, but I'd have to do more research on that to know.
I just want to thank the board members for being here, and you know, based on the information we provided on the agricultural profitability, which generally shows that there's generally a net loss in most instances for being able to use the property. And as the city attorney actually pointed out, that in at least one case wouldn't be able to argue that the property would be able to conform to the surrounding uses for the most part. We feel like we've been able to meet the legal principles that are involved of being able to obtain a variance. I know that obviously the city has concerns because of the Ames Fringe plan, and as Charlie pointed out in his staff report, just because we were granted the ability to build a residential home doesn't preclude the property from full development. And that would be our, obviously in the future, at some point, if this area ever does get developed, you know, it's not something that we're necessarily intending on doing, but, you know, our point is, we would like to do is being a single-family home. And I know a lot of the property owners in the surrounding area have been concerned about the area being developed to the urban residential density that the city currently would like to develop the property to. As far as the conditions which the city has requested, is my understanding, generally speaking, that those conditions are usually applied to developers when the developers are ready to develop a property. In this case, in my opinion, in building a residential home is not necessarily subdividing and developing the property, which is generally when those conditions would be applied. So putting conditions on the property now versus sometime in the future, if the property is around it wherever it's developed, that's when the city would go to that property owner when they want to develop it and say, hey, you have to sign these development agreements for annexation and so on. None of the other properties in the area have got that annexation agreement except for, with the exception of, from my knowledge, the 35 acres that Charlie spoke about to the north that was divided up into two parcels, one, a 4 or 5 acre parcel, and then a 35 acre parcel, which in general, from my understanding, would not necessarily conform to the fringe plan either. However, at that time, the city allowed it to take place. So I think that's all I've got. Thank you for your time.
We will then close this portion of that and begin deliberations, and so we'll only ask for responses if we specifically bring people up. Question, Charlie, as we go through for staff, I mean, we're dealing with right today is 186 acre parcel.
You're talking about this application? No, the application, if the variance were to be approved, it would be on the 34 acre parcel, I believe is what it is.
Records today, is there only one 186?
No, I mean, and you can see from the map that Mr. Kuchar provided, you'll see that there's various individual parcels within that 106 or 186 acres, and that's all, you know, based off quarter section lines mainly and previous splits of those properties. But when that purchase took place, they purchased 168 total acres or somewhere around there, and the individual parcel, you know, out of that 186 acres, there seems to be 7 total parcels, it appears, so, of various sizes. Does that answer your question?
Oh, I think so. I just wanted to make sure that we didn't have a cart before the horse sort of thing. This parcel does legally exist.
Yeah, yep, definitely. No, yeah.
That was my main point, to make sure I understood the legal process there. Other comments or questions from the board?
I have a couple of questions. Charlie, am I missing it, or is the CDP designation in the findings of fact? I can't seem to find it.
The Indriver Fringe Plan, and it's not. I think we only talked about the zoning. It's not, and it probably should be.
Extension the Ames Urban Fringe designation, because Ames Urban Fringe is a component
of the CDP. Yep.
Given that, then we probably ought to go back because in past board action, you know, you approved last month the fact if we wish to amend those, I'd like to ask for a motion to amend the finding of fact. Correct. Okay, that's what I didn't know, whether since we've been past the finding. Okay. We can obviously do that. So, then let's go backwards, which you started, Aaron. I appreciate it. Finding the facts. One point has been brought up that the CDP and the Ames Urban Fringe was not included in the findings of facts. Are there other items to the finding of fact that would like to be considered this evening? If not, I'd like to suggest a motion that would adopt the findings of facts with the amendment that you had proposed?
I'd amend that we adopt the findings of fact with the amendment that it be noted that the property in question falls within the urban services area of the Ames Urban Fringe Fund.
Second.
Okay, we've got a motion from Steele, a second from McGill, to amend the findings of facts to include the fact that this site is included in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan and the CDP, I suppose, at that point in time. Okay, any discussion on that? Okay, if not, roll, please.
Miller.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Charlotte.
So we've approved the findings of facts as amended here by the board. So then we do move on to the deliberation. And I think as was brought up by the applicant, it certainly is the case and the one that is usually the highest standard as we go down through that is the land in question cannot yield a reasonable return if used for a purpose allowed in that zone. I do believe that we have a bit of an extenuated circumstances here and that often we're faced with things where we don't have an option. But staff has recommended an option of considering going through rezoning that does indeed exist, which many times we do not have. And I think it may be appropriate for the board to have a conversation about, since we do have an option, not whether one is right or one is wrong, whether we have a situation that can work for everybody as we move through this, you know, method that may or may not be part of a variance. Do we have a sense for that from the board?
It does seem to me that we are, by approving the variance, that we would be carrying out kind of a legislative function or a planning function. Trying to determine what the best use of the property is or, in a sense, creating a unique zoning district with a 28-acre minimum lot size. And we have a process for that, and it's through the Planning Commission and on to the Board of Supervisors. So I agree.
I'm wrestling with this from the standpoint of the economic aspects of it. I've seen enough of this out in the ag area that I do question whether the economic in this situation. I disagree with them on that part. I've looked at this property. But I also agree that it is in the urban fringe district and there is a vehicle to go in and look at the zoning of the property. So I would go along with that myself.
Okay. Do you have a Well, our choices is put up here, especially if we believe that zoning may be a better approach from this as not. We would be looking at denying it, at least as proposed. That doesn't mean that the applicant doesn't have other options. But that we'd be stating is the variance option is not the one that we believe is appropriate in a situation like this.
Charlie, if a variance is denied, what's the time frame? When can the applicants reapply? Ever?
For a variance?
Yeah.
I'm looking at Leanne on this one because I'm not 100% sure if.
Or would the particulars of the variance request have to change?
I would think so, but I don't know if there's anything later in our ordinance or if there's anything. Never been asked that question before, so. I know in the past with conditional use permits, we've had a particular case that has come through the Board of Adjustment, I think, two or three times, but each time there's been something that's changed on it. But with a variance, I would imagine the same thing would have to apply. And
the decision as well?
We're essentially starting over by reopening it and going through the findings of facts. We're back at the point where...
Right.
Where we would be picking up, we have to pick up the legal principles, which is the one portion of that, which would then be followed by the final action. Someone care to put a motion forward then?
Okay, so basically the next move is we are adopting the legal principles, but then the final decision is in our last order, correct?
That is correct.
All right, I'll move to adopt the decision regarding the legal principles in the staff report prepared for and presented by the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment.
We've got a motion from McGill and a second from Steele to adopt the... decision regarding the legal principles in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment. Roll, please.
Gill?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye. So then we come to the final motion then, which is the final point that you were having on.
I'll move to deny the request as proposed by the applicant in case number VAR0312, as discussed by the Zoning Board of Adjustment in the staff report, prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment, finding that all the applicable legal principles have not been satisfied. Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, we've got a motion from McGill, a second from Steele, to deny the request as proposed by the applicant in case number VAR03-12, as discussed by the Zoning Board of Adjustment in the staff report, prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustment, finding that all applicable legal principles, we'll get through this, have not been satisfied. Roll, please.
Aye. Scarlett?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Steele?
Aye. Does not mean that your project is not a valid or logical project, but it does mean that you need to work with staff to develop your other alternatives. We wish you well in that process. We're pretty constrained in some of the things that we can consider as we go through that, but... we appreciate the fact you're trying to make a positive effect on that neighborhood. So, thank you. Any other business for the board this evening? People want to put down? Any comments from the board? We have any comments from our staff?
I did email the chair. We have a request from an applicant for conditional use permit for the Board of Adjustment to consider a special hearing in January. It's for a yard waste composting facility, I think is the correct term, being under contract with the City of Ames. They have an operational deadline to be up and going, if approved, by the beginning of March, March 1st. And looking at your calendar, and of course the calendar of the Planning and Zoning Commission, there is no leeway for the Planning and Zoning Commission to adjust their meeting in January or even sooner in December. So right now it's on your agenda for February 6th. The soonest beyond that we could have it at, for your docket would be January 30th, and it would need a special meeting of you all. So we're basically talking a week difference. Soonest we can do it and meet all the legal notification requirements that we have set up. If the commission doesn't meet until January 6th or 7th, the way the first of the year lies this year.
The commission meets January 7th. The Board of Adjustments on the 2nd.
So really we need a 2 to 3 week turnaround time to be able to do all the notifications we're required by.
I can't imagine a project that 1 week is a do or die.
that's a little hard for me. I mean, if we can, I'm not against meeting if we can get a quorum. That sometimes that's hard to do. The regular scheduled ones, a lot of us have, you know, boxed out on our calendars. I haven't looked at mine for that specific.
It's just a week sooner, but again, there is that 30-day appeal period wherein we've allowed the applicant to proceed on the property, but it's at their own risk. It can be appealed to the district court during that 30-day time frame.
Now, if we agreed to meet the week before, would that be in lieu of, or would we be somewhere we would have to hold 2 meetings, 2 weeks in a row?
I think we'd try to do it in lieu of the second.
We trade, and if it works with your schedule, does that
work with mine? I'm sure.
Okay. In terms of communicating to staff, I guess, I'm hearing that the board, so long as we haven't had a chance to check our calendar, we would be willing to reschedule, I'll use that term, reschedule the February meeting to the end of January, so long as we can get a quorum.
And we'll have to find a location.
Okay.
We'll be in contact with each of you tomorrow to see, have you check your calendars, and then find a location. And if it, all the pieces fall in place, we'll have a rescheduled meeting.
Do you have a meeting at the January? Early January?
No, not as of yet.
Not at this point.
We have to wait until the mail comes in tomorrow morning, however.
Items that people would like to bring up? If not, we will stand adjourned. Thank you very much.
Okay.